Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World, and Happy New Year to you. I know you've been waiting for this. You probably thought in your New Year's celebration, what is Steve Dale going to resolve for pets in the year 2021? I know you've been thinking that. I will tell you. Also, we're going to hear about, I've done interviews on all sorts of things, right? Everything you'd think over on WGN these 23, I think it is, years I've been on the radio here. Not this topic. Not this one. You'll hear about what that's about. I miss you, Dr. Susan Ferraro. I haven't talked to you.
I miss you. It's been a long time.
I know. Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
And you are a former president of the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association. Probably,
I am.
Yeah, probably all bundled up, but not so much in Chicago right now. I mean, I'm almost afraid to do this interview because I'm worried that if we do this, we're going to get like 4 feet of snow. The temperature will go to 40 below zero, you know, because it's been so mild relative to Chicago so
Absolutely.
Far. But eventually those things might happen. So how do we protect our pets from really cold weather is what we'll talk about. And I want to start here because this is the question I'm asked most often. Does my dog, fill in the blank on the kind of dog it is, the size of the dog, and we'll talk about all that, but does my dog need a sweater or a jacket? So should we be doing that? Yesterday, now I admit, Dr. Ferraro, that that our dog has like a wardrobe of coats and jackets and things. Talk to my wife about, you know, my wife. But
right, I do.
You do, actually. So she really does. And half of those outfits are pink. So I'm walking down the street with a pink coat on our jacket, on our dog. It was the day I did this, probably 35 degrees. I mean, it wasn't terribly cold out, but it was, you know, we have a Chihuahua mix. She's a small enough dog, Chihuahua Terrier. So she's a small enough dog at 9 pounds, where it makes sense to me, which we'll talk about in a moment. But this guy, I swear this happened. He pointed at me, pointed at the dog, and said, you know, I just moved here from Tennessee. Where I come from, dogs don't wear clothes. So really, that happened. So should our dogs be wearing protection when it's cold? If so, how cold, which dogs, and all of that?
I do think that some dogs need it. I think your big, really fluffy dogs, especially the winter-type dogs, the Alaskan breeds, the Malamutes, the Huskies, the German Shepherds, where they've got that nice, long, fluffy coat, they're big, they probably don't need a jacket. I think your thin-coated dogs, your fine-coated dogs, like a greyhound in a big dog, or even like your little Chihuahua mix, where they have really short, fine hair, probably do need a jacket just to keep an extra layer of warmth on them. I think that it is important. I think size matters, but I also think that if they've got a nice, big, fluffy coat, they probably don't need a sweater.
And percent of body fat does, too. So those sighthounds you mentioned,
sure,
like Salukis, Greyhounds, Whippets, I'm jealous because their percent of body fat is about a single digit, you know. And that's
exactly.
Not true with any human anywhere unless they're malnourished. So, but for those dogs, that's absolutely normal and appropriate. But there's no way, I don't believe, that even if it's 40 degrees, perhaps, that they can keep warm on their own.
Sure, I agree. And I think it depends, too, I think, on how active. You know, if you're out and you're running with the dog and you're exercising, well, no, you tend to get hot and you tend to shed layers. And so I suppose the dogs that are very, very active probably need less coverage. If you're like dogs that live with my lifestyle, we don't tend to do a lot of exercising. We tend to take a nice, slow, leisurely walk.
Yeah.
They probably need a bit more coverage because we're just, you know, it's cold and we're not moving all that much.
How about the age of the dog? Does that matter? I'm thinking geriatric dogs.
I do think that the age does matter. I think that the older dogs definitely have a bit more trouble. I think, you know, add to it as they age, a lot of them develop arthritis and, you know, joint issues. And as we know, cold weather doesn't help that. Although exercise, I think, is still really important. Getting out and moving, I think, is really critical for good health.
What about the salt that, you know, so when we do get that snow and ice, people put down salt. I personally am a fan of pet-friendly salt.
Absolutely. And if I could convert everybody to that, I would. Although that sells out pretty quick in a rush, I will say. If you're not sure, salt, I think, can definitely be a problem in their little feet. It dries it out. It cracks them. It's painful. Oftentimes, if you're walking with the dog and they're, you know, trying to hop from one foot to the other, it is salt related. So getting them off the path and onto a surface with some nice clean snow and just wiping in between their feet will help. Making sure you wipe their feet when they come in from being outside, especially on the city sidewalks that have a ton of salt on them, I think it's really important. Booties, if you can convince your dog to wear them, and if you want to try your luck with booties, the best time to do it is to start them when they're young, so that they become used to being walking and wearing the booties. That can be a big help as well.
Can dogs get frostbite?
They can. They definitely can. Especially on the thin-coated areas that are exposed, their feet and their toes, their ears. Frostbite looks much like it does in people. The area becomes quite red, and then it becomes white. It's kind of hard to the touch. It's very painful. And so it is possible that if... I don't worry as much about frostbite here because we, as the walker, tends to be the rate-limiting step. I think sometimes our dogs would be willing to go out longer. We, however, do not like being in the cold weather, so we tend to stop and go home fairly quickly. But I think it's really important to recognize that you need to limit the amount of time, particularly in the sub-zero weather, and learn to recognize the symptoms of it. The Chicago VMA has a link on their website, chicagovma.org, to cold weather, and have a whole link on how to determine if your dog is having frostbite. Please don't put it in hot water, and please don't try and heat up the area with a hair dryer, stuff like that. That can create some more injury, and vigorous rubbing also can injure the tissue. So if you suspect frostbite, you should be calling your veterinarian.
Yeah. So is this a place potentially for, because it may happen, it seems to always, everything does happen on a weekend, right? So, or in the evening or whatever. So, or you can't get in to see your veterinarian unless it's really an emergency. Do you need to go to an emergency vet for this? So can you use telehealth and actually take a picture is another
absolutely possibility.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's becoming, at least in my practice, that's becoming more and more popular. We obviously want to have it helps me to kind of determine, yes, this is important. This is something we need to see now. This is something we can push off or, so I think a lot of it is really dependent upon having a history with your veterinarian so that once we know your pet, and have a firm grip on their medical history, that can also be a really big plus with using telehealth as a part of our therapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent point. Give me that website once again for the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association.
It's from Chicago, V as in Victory, M as in Mary, A as in Apple, .org.
Perfect. Or as in Chicago Veterinary Medical Association.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think. Dr. Susan Ferraro, good to talk to you again, and thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Bats and the human-animal bond? What am I talking about? We'll find out. And also my resolutions for pets for 2021 for now what I can say is this year. Dr. Patrick Flynn is a technical advisor for Central Florida for Zoetis. He has a master's in anthrozoology, which really has to do with what we're about to talk about, and is a member of the board of directors for the Human-Animal Bond Association. Dr. Flynn, I think I've been doing this radio show, how many years now, 15 years? We've never done an interview quite like this. Bats, you heard me right, friends, bats and the human-animal bond. Can you explain that? Because most people think of bats, and I bet half of the listeners are already, holding their hands over their head, you know.
Right.
Oh, no, the bats are going to get into my hair. We have so many misconceptions about bats. So anyway, I'll let you go from here.
So true. I remember well my grandfather chasing a bat around up in upstate New York in the kitchen late at night, and it seemed like something just from the depths of hell had come into our house. But the reality is these guys are just fascinating little creatures and are so beneficial. I think of the human-animal bond as kind of a zoom lens. We can go down really micro right to your relationship with your goldfish or really your relationship with the entire planet, and they're somewhere in between. And they offer us so much positive results and cool things. You think about, over the past few years, we've learned more and more about bees and how important bees are. And these guys are just as tireless. They're actually the second most common mammal on the surface of the earth. There are almost 1,500 species of bats, and about almost 50 in North America. And they do amazing work. Mainly the biggies that I'll mention are pollination, parasite control, and nitrogen supply for a million different other little creatures in their caves, but also for humans.
All right, so I want to take briefly one by one there, and let's begin where you began.
Well, let's begin with what I say, parasite control. They are amazing little buggers. In fact, they do literally billions of dollars of work for us on a yearly basis. It's averaged between $1 to about $4 billion of parasite control, meaning that one single bat can consume up to 1,000 mosquitoes in 1 hour. And we see populations of bats, particularly in the United States. If you live in Texas, you know this well. There are some large populations. Bats are really social. They love to live together. They're really good moms and dads. They take care of they only get one pup a year, so they're really, really very careful with them, and the whole community is very careful with them. But there are places in Texas when the bats come out in the evening, they can be detected on Doppler radar. And they go out and fly over agricultural fields and all different areas, even living areas, and remove enormous amounts of flying insects that could be vectors for various disease and also problems for crops.
Yeah, vectors for disease like heartworm that impact our dogs, but
exactly.
Potentially Zika, which impacts people all around the world. Aside from, I'm sure there's need for some mosquitoes. I don't know what that is. But imagine if there were no bats, how many mosquitoes we would have in the United States. I mean, it would be absolutely overwhelming. And aside annoying, we'd have a disease problem as well. But pollination, I want to talk about that too.
Yeah.
Because without the pollinators, we've got a problem.
Huge problem. And again, people like to think of like little flowers and bees and things, and that's awesome. But bats do this as well. In fact, they pollinate things that you wouldn't think of, like bananas and mangoes. And literally, if you've ever had a tequila drink, you say thank you to a bat because they pollinate agave plants. So we would not have tequila without bats.
Oh, then I'm hugely grateful, I can tell you.
Absolutely. In fact, that's why I really have on Bacardi. You'll notice if you look close at their logo, it is a bat.
I never put all that together. You're right about that. Now, I want to talk about the pandemic just a bit. It turns out bats probably... I don't know exactly what happened. I'm not sure anybody does quite at this point. But probably the novel coronavirus, the SARS coronavirus 2 that we've been suffering with, really came from one of those wet markets they're called in China, originated in a bat, may have jumped to a different animal. Nobody's sure about that. Ended up in people. However, bats live all the time with all sorts of coronaviruses. If veterinarians like yourself can figure out how they do that, can we help ourselves?
That's the thing. Like, bats may have the ultimate key and gift to us to figure out all of this. They can carry so many coronaviruses, and they don't get sick. They never run fevers. They can withstand enormous variations of cold and heat. They even have really cool coagulative abilities in their blood. So they carry a lot of really cool information that we don't know anything about yet. And so hopefully bats will continue to contribute to overall human happiness and to our overall bond with the living world.
Well, I think you made some great points. Hopefully people will think about bats just a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Dr. Patrick Flynn from the Human-Animal Bond Association, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
So to learn more about the Human-Animal Bond Association, it's humananimalbond.net. All right, here are some of my resolutions for 2021. Many more on my website, that's stevedale.tv. number one, and this kind of got lost in everything that happened because a product was launched right as the pandemic began. Who is going to pay attention to the product, right? Well, this product turns out to save cat lives. That means more cats adopted from shelters, fewer cats relinquished to shelters, and bettering our lives with cats. You know, people, the number one allergy or one of the allergies that's most common on the planet, people allergic to cats. And then the allergists say, well, keep the cat out of your bedroom. Keep the cat away from you. Well, out of the bedroom kind of makes sense because that's 8 hours a day or 6 hours a day. I don't know how much sleep you get that you're not with your cat. That kind of makes sense. But the human-animal bond kind of suffers as a result of all that. But what if there was a food, a cat food that prevents people from being allergic to cats? There is such a thing. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. The food neutralizes the protein that causes the allergy that makes us go achoo when a cat is around and our eyes run and much worse. So it's Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. I will talk more about that in 2021. Also, I am sick of it. Tired of it. Those TV commercials on the morning shows that say, feed your dog like a wolf, treat your dog like a wolf, train your dog like a wolf. Our dogs are not wolves. And I will talk more about that in 2021 as well. Fear Free, an initiative which is just wonderful that began a couple of years ago to suggest that we can do something about the emotional well-being of our pets. Veterinary medicine is doing great, better than ever before with every passing month for cutting-edge medicine regarding doing things that whoever thought we could do that regarding medical health. Emotional health matters as well. And there's a website, by the way, with great information because there's so much misinformation online, right? Well, this is great information, and it's fearfreehappyhomes.com. Fear Free is all about minimizing fear, anxiety, and stress of veterinary visits, but now there are fear-free animal shelters, fear-free groomers, fear-free dog trainers, and it goes on and on for good reason. This has totally taken off. Telehealth. I will talk more about that in 2021, how to best utilize that for the benefit of you and your companion animals. This happened in Vacaville, California. Now, can you imagine this? Someone is pulling up, a delivery person, I believe, and hears a dog screaming, turns around, ultimately takes video of all this, so we've seen it. And that is a police officer who's training, quote unquote, a dog to be a police dog, is literally got the dog forced pinned down on the ground on the dog's back and socking the dog in the face. Punch, 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 punch. The dog in the face. No wonder the dog is screaming. The dog apparently went to bite him during the training session. And this is what presumably, hard to believe, but there are dog trainers who do say this. The dog trainer said to do to teach the dog dominance. Well, we don't need to be dominant over our dogs. That's a mistaken notion anyway. There is no dominance. That doesn't make any sense. Yes, we have to be good teachers. We should motivate our dogs to do what we want them to do. Punching in the face is not motivation. And this is just wrong. And I'm a huge supporter, as listeners who regularly hear me know, of police and law enforcement. But this is still wrong. Any way you slice it, it's wrong. And the sergeant who's on videotape first defended the police officer who did this, suggesting, well, this is what the trainer told us to do. Well, it's still wrong. And if science doesn't help you, and we know scientifically, study after study has shown positive reinforcement dog training is the way to go. It's also the most humane thing. But beside that, that's how dogs learn best. But wouldn't your gut tell you that this is animal abuse? Period. End of story. And I hope we never see a story like this again. Steve Dale's Pet World. I'll be here next week. I'll talk to you next Sunday morning, 5:30, bright and early.